You're tuned to WFHB.
Volunteer powered.
Listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community and supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM, reporting live for WFHB. This is Carolyn Vanderweel.
And I'm Sarah Vaughn. This is the Daily Local News for Thursday, January 17th, 2019.
I didn't run for mayor to be a mayor who just is so careful that we don't try things that don't work, make mistakes. That's going to happen in a big government of 700 people, and I'm one of them.
Bloomington Mayor John Hamilton announced he'll stand for re-election this year. Hamilton speaks with WFHB News Director Wes Martin about his administration's miscalculations and victories over the past 3 years in today's featured report.
And with the 2019 budgetary session underway at the State House in Indianapolis, our weekly public opinion feature, Voices in the Street, asks area residents if teachers should get a pay raise. That's coming up later in the program, but first, your daily headlines.
The third National Women's March takes place this Saturday. As WFHB correspondent Rasha Kamhawe reports, women across the country are expected to march on state capitals and D.C., including in Indianapolis.
The Indiana chapter of the Women's March on Washington is organizing its third annual march, which will take place this Saturday in downtown Indy. The march starts at 1 p.m. at Monument Circle and continues until the American Legion Mall. Savannah Perlman is the chair of the Board of Directors of Women's March Indiana.
We are a nonpartisan, nonprofit organization, but we have certain values and certain stances on particular issues. So, for instance, we're huge supporters of LGBTQ rights and women's rights. We believe in racial justice. We believe that there should be no wall to divide us and that immigration is one of the things that makes our country great. While we do not support a particular political party, those values define our movement in a lot of ways. You know, Indiana, we had some victories, but we certainly had some defeats in terms of those values. And so that's why for this march, we're basically reflecting back on this past election year and considering all of the change that we still have to implement to make our state reflective of the values that we care about.
This Saturday's Women's March route is a little less than a mile long and should take about 15 minutes to walk. At 10 in the morning, Planned Parenthood of Indiana and Kentucky and All Options Pregnancy Resource Center will host a reproductive rights advocacy training section. The third annual March on Washington takes place at 1 p.m. in Indianapolis and ends at 1:30 with a rally following. Charlie Fitzgerald is giving the keynote address. She is the guidance counselor at Roncalli High School, who was placed on administrative leave after the Catholic school discovered she was married to a woman. The National Weather Service is predicting a winter storm in Indianapolis this Saturday, with expected below-freezing temperatures, with snow and freezing rain. Perlman says the march will take place unless there's a road closure along the marching route.
We are monitoring the weather, so that might be something that people are wondering about. But as long as things are safe, and, you know, as long as there are no road closures, we are planning to continue to march snow or no snow, because we feel that this is a really important moment. We've been all year dealing with attacks on our communities, on our rights, on our values. And so we feel that it's necessary annually to come back and show our resistance and that we are still here. This is a movement that isn't fading. And so we would encourage folks to come out as long as it's safe for them to do so.
The march on Saturday is timed with other women's marches in Washington, D.C., and other cities around the country. For WFHB, I'm Rasha Kamhawi.
Monroe County is positioned to complete a major portion of its Fullerton Pike East-West connectivity project this year. Monroe County Public Works Director Lisa Ridge expects Phase 1 to be completed this spring. That phase runs from Walnut Street Pike to just west of Old State Road 37. Ridge says tree clearing and utility relocation have already begun for Fullerton Pike Phase 2. This phase will include a 200-foot bridge and a roundabout at the intersection of Gordon Pike and South Rogers Road. Ridge updated the Monroe County Redevelopment Commission about the project in a meeting yesterday. She says her team is working toward a November completion date for Phase 2.
Originally, when that project was set up and it was bid, it was to be constructed in two construction seasons. The bridge this year from May till November, and then next year the contractor would come back and do the construction for the roundabout at Rogers Street and Gordon Pike in 2020. We've had two or three meetings with the contractor. We've spoken with NDOT. We have spoke with the school system, and we believe we are going to do that in one construction season and do it all in 2019. And we will be able to keep traffic open for two-lane traffic on Gordon Pike to Rogers Street, so that will help the school system. And what this will do will only tie up maybe some school traffic in May, a little bit in April and May. They get out usually the end of May, first of June. So, and then their goal is to have the roundabout and all of that back open in August before school starts, and then finish up around Thanksgiving.
Ridge says keeping Fullerton Pike Phase 2 contained to one construction season will save Monroe County money.
You won't have additional construction inspection fees. You can, I think where the pavement, the thing, the different options that they've come up with the pavement can save about $90,000 there. So that's our goal.
As for Fullerton Pike Phase 3, Ridge says it hasn't even been designed yet. That phase will begin with contract negotiations with contractor American Structure Point. Ridge said the million-dollar contract could be paid in part with federal transportation funds from the Bloomington Metropolitan Planning Organization. This third phase would run just west of Gordon Pike to Rogers Road. Ridge says completion of that phase could take another 5 years.
If you say a year for design, a year for right-of-way, you're looking 2 years out. That gives us some time to save money in the major bridge fund to build that 400-foot bridge, too. So you would probably, you're looking out there at, then you're probably at, 2023, maybe?
Ridge plans to hold a public information session on Fullerton Pike Phases 2 and 3 in April. Commission Vice President Richard Martin asked Ridge whether their project is being designed with growth in mind.
I want to make sure that we are planning far enough in the future in terms of capacity on those, because that is certainly going to be a growth area, and we don't want to be building it for now and not thinking about 20 years from now and having to tear it all out and redo the whole thing.
That's our goal, and I think that's kind of where we are with Fullerton Pike. We get a lot of feedback over the size of that roundabout. But again, I'm not an engineer, but you listen to the engineers and they want to build it to where it can handle the capacity that's anticipated in future years.
Ridge also updated the commission on other road projects. Four are on the county's west side. Construction to connect two short roads near the Northwest YMCA to Hart Strait Road will begin this year. Ridge says construction on a Vernal Pike extension will also begin this year. And Ridge says designs for extending Profile Parkway to Whitehall Crossing Shopping Center are underway. A fourth project would address the problematic intersection of Smith Pike, Curry Pike, and Woodyard Road. Ridge says engineers have two possible solutions in mind.
Our original is a dog bone roundabout. That was one concept that's out there. And the other one is a roundabout, but making Woodyard Road into a T-intersection into a little northern piece of Smith Pike.
The public can learn more about the Curry Pike Woodyard Road project at an information session on February 13th. Ridge and Redevelopment Commission President Efrat Pfefferman say officials will work to stage the county's road projects to avoid the kind of stress residents felt last summer when I-69 construction, county road projects, and Bloomington City Utilities projects all overlapped. Ridge says last year's situation couldn't have been avoided because so many projects were funded with federal dollars that had to be spent by a certain date or the money would be lost. She's hopeful 2019 will go smoothly and said the city and county are actively working toward better coordination. The public can keep up to date on road, bridge, and stormwater projects by visiting the Public Works pages of the county's website. That's co.monroe.in.us. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Sarah Vaughn.
And I'm Carolyn Vanderweel. Support for WFHB is provided by attorneys Eric Slotograph and Ben Neoff. Slotograph Neoff is located at 200 East 3rd Street in downtown Bloomington, assisting families and small businesses in meeting the legal challenges of life, providing estate planning and wills, as well as family law services. More information is available at 812-332-6000 or online at slotographlegal.com. Slotograph Neoff, law for business, community, and life.
Bloomington Mayor John Hamilton announced earlier this month that he'll stand for re-election. The first-term Democrats' administration has faced challenges and accomplished much more over the past 3 years, as he tells WFHB in today's feature report.
This is WFHB News Director Wes Martin, and I'm joined in our studio with Bloomington Mayor John Hamilton. Mayor Hamilton, thank you so much for being here.
Delighted to be here at FHB. Wes, good to see you again.
Good to see you. And also, I have to ask you, you recently announced that you're going to be running for re-election as Bloomington Mayor. Why would anybody want to do this job for another 4 more years?
Well, Wes, I love the job. Every time I get a chance to be with other mayors, I can kind of sympathize with that question. But being a mayor of Bloomington, this is such an incredible city. There's so much going on. I feel so lucky to be here at this time working with the community to keep making it better. And it's a joy to go to work every day and to be able to work with all the wonderful people of Bloomington to try to help make this place better and better.
Mayor Hamilton, there's been a couple of miscalculations, I think that's a fair designation, in this administration, particularly talking about the city's data portal hosting information about overdose victims or the purchase of an armored car for the Bloomington Police Department and annexation attempt.
Mm-hmm.
Those are big questions about the last 3 years. And so I'm wondering, do you stand by those decisions, or are those things that you would want to do over or would make a different decision?
Sure.
If you could.
Sure. Look, re-elections, election seasons, particularly if it's a re-election, it's basically a job interview, right? It's a time to talk with the community about what we've done together and what I've done in the job of mayor over the last 3 years. And absolutely, like in any job interview, my view is you kind of look at, hey, what did you try to do? What were your responsibilities and how did it go? And I think my first day in office, I said, we're going to try a lot of things in this job. I didn't run for mayor to be a mayor who just is so careful that we don't try things that don't work, make mistakes. That's going to happen in a big government of 700 people, and I'm one of them. So I think in the big picture, I'm very proud of the work we've done to make progress in jobs, which drives so much of the economy, to make real progress in affordable housing. We have hundreds of units of affordable housing that we didn't have before, to make the government work better, to improve the quality of life. And then were there some activities that didn't work out? Absolutely. You know, to tick off the three that you mentioned, look, annexation, we celebrated the bicentennial last year. Bloomington is 200 years old. We annexed for 192 years of those 200 years. The city grows. We get more people. The boundaries change. And when I came into office, it's, well, we hadn't done anything for 12 years. We really need to talk about it and think about it. And I continue to think the boundaries of Bloomington need to keep evolving to reflect the way people live on the ground. We're in a lawsuit right now because the state government stopped us midway through that process. I think that kind of discussion still is important. What should the boundaries of Bloomington be? And that's a discussion we need to have. And yes, some people get upset about it. I think what the legislature did was unconscionable and unconstitutional because they picked out Bloomington and said, we're going to stop you from doing your annexation. But the debate, the discussion of where the boundaries of the community be, we've been talking about for 200 years, and we're going to keep talking about them. So that's the way that works. You know, the armored rescue vehicle, we know, and I've said, that the way that debate began was awkward and should have begun in a different way. The key thing was this community had a very extensive debate publicly about, do we want an armored vehicle to replace one we had before in the police department or not? And that's a very valid debate, and I'm comfortable. There are definitely strong views on both sides on that issue. I'm comfortable that we had a very extensive public debate about that decision. Should we have one or should we not? I continue to believe that we were, as a community as a whole, took the appropriate steps to protect the people who protect us. We also have the most public use of an armored vehicle of any city in the, maybe in the country, definitely in Indiana. Every month at the Public Safety Board, there's a review of, was the vehicle deployed, under what circumstances, let's review it. It's been deployed 3 times since we brought it in last summer, all for armed hostage situations, used appropriately in my view. So that was a very hot public debate about it, and there's some people who think we should have gone differently, but I'm comfortable that we had that debate, we're using it appropriately, and we're keeping our officers safe, which is a key thing. When an officer was shot at 3 times just a month ago, and we live in a world with way too many guns, so we have to protect them. On the opioid data, which you referenced, so going back through these, it's kind of a job interview, right? I am deeply committed to transparency, and sometimes the process of sharing information is painful. And I think this community, the decision to put that information out was done through a committee of county, city professionals who looked at, how do we understand what's going on with this scourge of opioids? And where are people dying? Where is overdose happening? What parts of the city? What kinds of places? And it is really important to understand. But the mapping of it proved to be painful for some people. We pulled that back. But, you know, I also said on my first day in office, we're going to be a very transparent administration. And we have 150 data sets up online right now to help people know this is your data. So, you know, in the big scheme of things, I'm really proud of what this administration, this community has done. Absolutely. As I said on day one, we're going to try some things that don't work. You know, we try a lot of things and some of them work and some of them don't. But on balance, the community, I think, is, you know, we're better off now than we were 3 years ago. The progress, the momentum, we have a lot of challenges in front of us, but that's what gets me up every morning and working with the community.
2019 is a huge year for your administration and for the city of Bloomington in general. We've got the upcoming Trades District, which mm-hmm. Dimension Mill is now open. We've also got Switchyard Park ready to come online at some point in 2019.
Late 2019 mentioned. Should open up.
Mm-hmm. And then also the new hospital site that your administration has been working with the IU Health Foundation mm-hmm. to figure out what to do with this when the hospital moves out to the bypass. So those are some big accomplishments. And I think I just wanted to give you an opportunity to kind of brag about that and brag about the work your administration has done.
Well, look, the community, when I came in, I talked about the string of pearls, these 4 major projects right along the B-line corridor. It helps remind us, you know, turning this rail line into a trail. And you wake up a few years later and you realize there's these 4 huge community asset projects that are developing along that. That was a really smart thing to do that my predecessors in the community did with the B-line. So, you know, right from, and any one of them, any mayor would be proud and probably feel fulfilled to be part of. And we've got 4 at the same time. The Switchyard Park, which should open the end of this year, is under construction. Biggest park project in the city's history. It's going to create a whole new dynamic and energy in the southwest side. And it's really a regional asset. It's going to be a beautiful park. And I hope everybody will enjoy that. Moving up the way, as you mentioned, the current hospital site, we were able to cut a deal to get a very good discounted price to buy 24 acres right downtown that the community is then going to get to decide, what do we want to see happen there? That's unprecedented, to be able to take that big a area right downtown and re-envision what we want to have happen. Next block up is the convention center, and working with our county colleagues, passing a food and beverage tax and getting in place. This is 25 years old. We are a destination community, and we want more people coming here. They bring business and energy, and also civic events can happen there. And that's underway over the next few years to design. Again, the public will be deeply involved in that. And then 4th stop up the line is the Trades District, as you mentioned. And we opened the mill. We're supposed to call it the mill now. It's a better name, they tell me, than the Dimension Mill, too long. So we call the mill this exciting co-work space, business incubator, along with we've got an affordable housing project, Beeline Heights, opening right there to make sure as we want. This continues. This community continues to welcome people from all walks of life, and that's going to be a new job center for the city. And all four of those things are running along at the same time, and it's a good harbinger for our community that people want to be here. People love the quality of life here because of the 200 years of history that built this amazing community, and it's our job to hand it off to the next generations, keep getting it better and better and more welcoming to more people.
Mayor Hamilton, anything else that you want listeners to know that maybe I haven't asked, or anything in particular you want to impart with folks in Bloomington?
Thanks, Wes. I mean, we've talked about a lot of the good things going on in Bloomington, and there are many. We didn't talk a lot about the arts and the quality of life investments, the murals and the arts grants and such. So anyway, there's a lot of good things going on, but it is important, and every day I remember this community isn't working for lots of people. It's hard to live in Bloomington for some people. It's an expensive community. It has been my mantra from day one that we must make Bloomington a community that welcomes people and that works for people from all walks of life. We have people in deep poverty. We have homeless people here. We have people suffering from substance use disorder. We're, of course, not unique in that. And those are big, complicated challenges. But our community has a huge heart. We have hundreds of social service and nonprofit organizations that help us from government and help us as a community wrestle with those. And we've made a lot of progress with affordable housing. We work really hard to try to We've generated hundreds of units of affordable housing, and we're not done yet. And some developers don't like it. They don't like us pushing them to be part of the solution, but we will not solve it without this kind of pressure. We work very closely with Shalom and social service organizations. And, you know, as the community continues to develop and enhance with Cook doing 500 new jobs and Catalent doing 200 new jobs and Secretly Group and Hennepin and Envisage and Synopsys and these other companies growing jobs, which are so important, we always have to keep a keen focus too on making sure this expensive community works for people from all walks of life. And that's a balance. We don't always get it right. But if Bloomington doesn't solve that, if we don't make it possible for the teacher and the police officer and the nurse and the firefighter and the construction worker to be able to live in our community, then we are way poorer because of that. So that's an essential job still ahead of us that we're in the middle of.
Bloomington Mayor John Hamilton announcing he's running for re-election in 2019. Mayor Hamilton, thanks so much for coming by to WFHB.
Thank you, Wes, and thanks to WFHB.
The full interview with Bloomington Mayor John Hamilton will be available on WFHB's website, wfhb.org, after the show.
Support for WFHB comes from MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
Up next, our weekly public opinion segment, Voices in the Street.
Welcome to Voices in the Street, WFHB's weekly public opinion feature. Voices in the Street provides an opportunity for people in our community to share their opinions and perspectives on the issues and events that matter most to Bloomington residents.
In the recent week, Los Angeles Unified School District teachers went on strike against the district demanding better salaries and smaller class sizes. Voices in the Street went out to ask area listeners if they believe the teachers are paid enough.
In some cases, yes. In some cases, no. I think it honestly depends on a teacher-to-teacher basis. I've had a lot of teachers where I think, no, this teacher needs a hell of a raise. Then I've had others where I'm like, I could learn this from a book.
No, because I think that they work a lot more hours than they're set to work. And I think that they work a lot harder than people think that they do. And I think it's a very stressful job with a lot of expectations that they're not getting paid for, as well as the fact that we're the lowest paid teachers in the modern world, it seems like. I think most advanced countries do far better than we do. So I think that's bad.
I think that it's a profession that they don't really do it for the pay. And so I think that, no, because it's a very important profession, but I think that getting them to have more pay is probably not the main concern in public education currently.
No.
Why not?
Well, compared to the private school teachers, they make more money, don't they?
Yeah.
Oh, I just think it's the foundation of education, so they should probably get more money. I think police officers and firefighters all them too.
No, because I think they should be paid more than, what, $40,000 a year?
No, I do not think so, because they put in a lot of hard work and effort, and I just don't think it's a reasonable amount.
No. They have a really difficult job with too many rules, regulations, and restrictions on what they do, and they should be paid more and allowed more freedom in what they teach and the way they teach it.
No. They are very important to the education success of the children they teach, and I think they should be better compensated.
Depends. I don't know. Like, I know some get paid more than others, depending on how long they've been there.
Yeah, you know, I think they are.
Yeah.
I think they have a pension and, you know, they have all those benefits. I think they are paid enough right now.
I don't know. I just, like, really, back in the day, I respected my teachers a lot, and they just honestly never seemed like, for the work that they put into it, that they got paid enough.
My sister was a school teacher for 37 years, and she was not paid enough.
I think they have a lot of responsibility. And there is a lot more than that goes into their job other than just the, you know, 8 or 9 a.m. to 2 or 3 p.m. Yeah. They take a lot of work home with them. I have a lot of respect for teachers because they are shaping and molding our future leaders of America. And, I guess I think they just deserve higher pay.
I'm not sure how much they make. I think some definitely need to make more, and I think some definitely need to be fired.
I don't know their exact salary on average, but if I had to give you an answer, I think they're very undervalued. And so, I mean, yeah, I don't think they're paid enough, no.
They work very hard, and I just don't think they're paid nearly what they're worth, which is why it's hard to get science and math teachers.
This has been Voices in the Street, WFHB's weekly public opinion segment, featuring candid commentary from your friends and neighbors on the issues and events that matter most to Bloomington residents. Voices in the Street is a volunteer-powered production of our News and Public Affairs Department here on WFHB 91.3 and 98.1 FM, community radio for South Central Indiana.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Rasha Kamhawi, along with Sarah Vaughn for Cats Week, a partnership with Community Access Television Services. Our feature was produced by Wes Martin.
Voices in the Street was produced by Isaac Gonzalez. Our engineer today is Tal Rothenberg. Our theme music is provided by Ben Lemstein, Scott Schmadke, and Danny Graff. Executive producer is Wes Martin. For WFHB, I'm Sarah Vaughn.
And I'm Carolyn Vandeweel. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered independent daily news program.
Stay tuned for Big Talk with Michael Glab, a WFHB News and Public Affairs program highlighting the issues, events, and people of South Central Indiana. That's coming up next on WFHB.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB Bloomington Community Radio. Our news is written and reported by volunteers working to provide local news, cover local issues, and strengthen our local community. We invite you to participate. You may submit questions, comments, and story ideas to news@wfhb.org. You can become a daily local news volunteer by attending new volunteer orientation. You can find an archive of past shows and individual news reports online at wfhb.org and catch live broadcast of the Daily Local News Monday through Thursday at 5 p.m. We are local, longer.